Our speaker today is Dr. Jennifer Burgess. Dr. Burgess is the Associate Professor of Psychology and Counseling here at Criswell, as well as a Program Director of both the BA in Psychology and the MA in Counseling Programs. Dr. Burgess is originally from Louisiana and went to college at Louisiana Tech. She earned her master's degree at the University of Louisiana and her doctorate at the University of Denver. We're also honored to have Dr. Burgess' son, Nikolai, join us today. And after a brief period away as an interim at DBU, the prodigal daughter of the Criswell College has left our rival school and come back to her people. Oh, we're thankful to have you back. Her faithful return has made me hopeful for the return of someone else. As Christians, we know of the one who will save us from these dark times we currently face. You know who I'm talking about. Say it with me. Luka! That's right, Luka Doncic. Dallas just has not been the same since he was pushed away by evil incarnate, aka Nico Harrison. But Nico is gone. And if history has taught us anything, anyone can return home. LeBron did it with Cleveland. Odysseus made it home to Ithaca. And Dr. Burgess has returned to the Criswell College. And Luka is just the next one in line to come back where he belongs. What I wouldn't give to have that chunky Slovenian basketball superstar back home. He made life worth living every time he stepped onto the court, and made it even more wonderful every time he stepped back on the court. I mean, he was unguardable. Why would you trade that kind of player away? How twisted of a person do you have to be to set an entire franchise back 20 years? I mean, we got lucky with Cooper Flagg, but Luka was already developed. We just made the finals. I still can't wrap my head around it. Give it up for Dr. Burgess, my bad. I got distracted.
Anybody that's ever having a class with me knows I think better when I pace, so y'all just roll with it. It's interesting. Like, I love this Kahoot. I don't know who made it. Steven said that it's probably AI. That makes my stomach hurt because I don't want to be replaced by a computer. We'll talk about is anxiety, and everybody experiences it at some point. We're going to start with a little bit of a personal story. I come from a very long line of storytellers in my family, and we're going to start out a personal experience. I'm 18 years old. I've just finished my freshman year in college, and I go home. I mean, like most people do in the summer. And my daddy says, let's go fishing. Something we did a lot. He had an 18-foot fishing boat. We lived in Houston at the time. So we pack up all of the gear and we launch our boat off the coast of Galveston into the Gulf of Mexico. We drop lines, we're visiting, we're talking about college, and my daddy looks over his shoulder and sees this bank of black clouds rolling in and says, maybe we should go back in, right? So we start packing up as much as we can. The waves start getting super big. I don't know how big they got, maybe like 14, 15 foot waves. We're going down, waves are crashing over the bow of the ship. I sit down and proceed to have a death grip on the railing. Unfortunately, I'm sitting in the front of the boat. This is not where you want to be in a storm, right? But I am so focused on the waves, the storm, everything around me, my brain is completely frozen. Fight, flight, freeze. I can't hear anything. I can't think of anything. I am absolutely positive I'm going to die. This is a realistic fear because four people died in that storm on small boat craft. Obviously, I didn't. When we get back to shore, finally, my dad says, why did you stay in the front of the boat? I said, well, it didn't occur to me to move. And he's like, I was yelling at you repeatedly to try to get you in the back of the boat. I never heard my dad's voice. Why? Because the anxiety had so consumed me, right? And what happens in that moment is your body starts dumping cortisol and adrenaline from your amygdala, which is seat of our emotion, right? And it's like a hamster on a wheel saying, you got to do something, you got to do something, you got to do something. But I'm trapped on this little boat surrounded by wind and waves. What am I going to do? I can't conquer this. I'm not big enough. I'm not enough, right? And so when I read Matthew 14, 22 to 23, this story hits me different. Because I'm not just reading about a flat account of the disciples in a boat, in a storm on the Sea of Galilee. I always go back to this memory, sure, that I'm gonna die, right? So we all know the story. Jesus has been busy doing things, sends them in the boat on ahead, right? And what happens? He goes up to the mountain and prays, and the wind kicks up, right? In the version that I have, it's pretty interesting. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. That's pretty funny. The wind was contrary. The wind was going to overtake them. Jesus comes to them walking on the wave, but they are so consumed with their anxiety, they don't recognize him right off. Peter walks on water because he's focused on Jesus. Almost every sermon I've ever heard about this passage focuses on Peter's faulting faith, right? When he takes his eyes off Jesus and sees the storm again. I'm cowering in the bottom of the boat with the other 11 disciples. There is no way you're getting me out of this boat. None. So I've got mad respect for Peter because he actually got out of the boat. And I'm like, that's not logical. That doesn't make sense to my brain. Because I couldn't hear my daddy's voice saying, this is what to do, right? When we experience anxiety, it's not enough. I'm not disregarding scripture, but it's not enough to tell your friend, cast your cares on God. Or don't be anxious. Don't worry. It's not enough. Why? Because you're consumed with the anxiety. You can't hear your father's voice. You can't hear truth, right? So what we've got to do is we've got to calm down that hamster spinning in our brain enough that then we can hear truth. So how do we do that? And that's really what we're going to focus on today. The first step, and I'm going to keep this as practical as I can. 30 minutes is not a long time. So if I blow past something and you want to come pick my brain, please come to my office. I don't see Dr. Woods, and so I'll tell y'all, I don't really like to do paperwork and like do things in my office. Y'all come distract me. It's so much more fun because then I'm building relationships with students, right? Or come invite me to play ping pong. It's great stress relief. So what happens is, right, in our conscious mind, right here in chapel, we're all safe. We know that God is in control. We know that we can give God all of our worries. We know that God has a path for us. We can rest in that. The day-to-day life, it is incredibly hard to remember because we get distracted with the storm. We get distracted with, oh, what if I go to chapel and I'm speaking and I make a fool of myself and everybody laughs and I say something really horribly wrong and they go to Dr. Creamer and complain and he fires me and then I can't afford to pay my mortgage and then I can't send my kids to college. This is what our brains do. And as I'm telling y'all that story, y'all are like, that's ridiculous. That's not going to happen. Right? I mean, it's just not realistic. But when it's your anxiety and you're in the midst of it, it feels real. It's overwhelming, right? So the very first thing we've got to do is we've got to separate out what's rational and what's not. I don't want to mess with rational fear. If you are walking through the woods and a bear comes and says, hey, let me be your friend, I don't want you to go pet the bear. I want you to run away, run up a tree, do something, right? We don't want to mess with rational fear. When it's irrational fear, we want to really identify where your brain takes it to the extreme and recognize, you know, that's probably not going to happen. And if it's not going to happen, then what is more likely to happen? Because if we can kick anything in gear from our rational brain, frontal lobe, right? If we can kick anything in gear, we can work ourselves through it. The anxiety does not go away. But it calms the hamster down enough that you can hear truth, that you can focus on what you know is coming, right? So a couple of things I want to do. I need a volunteer. Anybody brave? Okay, tell us what this is.
It's a Rubik's Cube.
Do you know how to solve it?
Not entirely.
If I gave you 45 seconds, could you solve it?
Oh, no.
Okay. How would you approach it if you're going to solve it?
I'd study it.
Okay. Study it. People pick up a Rubik's Cube. Anybody in here know how to solve a Rubik's Cube? How fast?
Just one side.
What? Nice. You're like my son, not this one, his older brother. The idea of a Rubik's Cube is interesting because people pick it up and we naturally just turn it this way and that way. Why? We're looking for an obvious first step, but there's not one. You either know how to solve it or you don't, right? I don't know how to solve one either. If you give me an entire hour, who over here said they could solve one side? Right, cool. If you give me an entire hour, I can solve one side. And what's going to happen is I can take this, is my son Ben, my older one, I can say, look, I solved it. And he's like, well, it looks good on the outside. It's still a hot mess behind. Because this is what we do. When we are confronting problems, we put on a mask, we put nice clothes on, we have a smile on our face. We look put together. People ask us how we're doing. I'm all right. I'm doing okay. And in behind, we're a hot mess, right? The only question in the Kahoot I take issue with is the one that says, if you're feeling anxiety, talk to your friends. Venting only helps sometimes. More often than not, what happens is we're taking our problem and we're giving it to our friend because we like them and says, solve it, and they don't know how to solve it any more than you do. So they're going to mess with it and make it worse. And then you're going to take it and give it to another friend. And they're going to do the same thing. The point is if you have a problem that you're struggling with, if you have something that's lighting up your anxiety, you have to give it to somebody that knows what they're doing. I can ask my son, Ben. I kind of wish he was still here. He had to go back to college. But I could hand this to him in 41 seconds. It's solved. It is mind-blowing to watch him do this. If he's got his speed cube that he can do competitions with, I think he said it's like under 20 seconds. It's mind-blowing. I'll go through high school. I would go in his room, and he's got like, I don't know, 4 dozen of these things, and I'll mess them all up, and he'll come in from school, and he'll solve them all before he starts his homework. I'm like, it's just crazy. It's just crazy. But so the idea is it's not enough to just vent to people. It's not enough to just talk to people. You actually have to do something practical. Take it to somebody who knows something, right? So this can be a friend, can be a parent, sometimes it's a therapist. The idea is what do you do next, okay? And it depends on what the problem is. If we're talking test anxiety, public speaking, the answer is going to be different. If you're in a fight with your girlfriend or boyfriend, the answer might be different. If you're worried about, oh, I'm going to graduate in May, and oh, what is God going to bring me to then? The answer is going to be different. There's not one right way. There's not one right answer. So talking about what we call adaptive coping skills or ways to make this better is difficult because everybody's brains wired differently. So I asked my son to dig this out. He carries this with him every day. It's an emotional support duck. If you are having a bad day, he will loan you his duck to help you feel better, right? I have a huge collection of stuffed animals at my house. Stuffed animals make me feel better. My dog makes me feel better, right? Spending time with family, playing cards, playing ping pong, playing pool. I'll play volleyball. I'll do a whole lot of things, right? Makes me feel better. Why? Because I am hardwired for social connection. The worst thing you can do for me is to put me in a space by myself, right? I have to know that about me. And I'm going to pick on Dr. Spring because I know this. Dr. Spring is introverted and she loves to read. If you put her in a room by herself with a book, probably guessing, happy place.
And you are terrifyingly extroverted.
Yeah, I'm terrifyingly extroverted. My kids love that, by the way. I do like to read, but I don't like to read in isolation. I would rather go to a coffee shop or a library, or my daughter, who also likes to read, and we're just hanging out on the couch together reading. I do not like to be alone. So part of this is about knowing your personality well enough to know what you need to do, what's coming. Right, so I want to talk through some coping skills, basic kinds of things. Recognize not all of these are going to work for everybody. The goal is to come up with 10 or so that work for you. Why 10? Well, okay, going for a walk with my dog is great. Until we get to Saturday and it's 15 degrees outside, not going for a walk with my dog. Just not going to, or it's pouring down rain, as my daddy used to say, it's a frog floater. Not gonna go for a walk then either. So I've gotta have something else to do, right? You know, I like to play ping pong. Most of the time I'm playing with my son, Ben. He's off at college, so I can't play ping pong. I can ask Nikolai to come play with me. My husband doesn't play ping pong as a rule, particularly not against me, because yeah, he doesn't like to lose. To be fair, I'm the 1993 ping pong champion of my college. So, now, it's been a minute ago, because I'm old now, and that was a long time ago, but I got some skills. So, I need a couple more volunteers. We're gonna, oh no, I have one escaping. Nikolai, pick that up. Okay, and I will warn you, these are exceptionally large for stress balls. Nikolai, give that to somebody else. These are exceptionally large for stress balls. All right. One of my favorite things in the world to do when I'm doing a network event is take stress balls with me. If I would have thought about it, I would have grabbed one at my office and brought it with me. They're in the shape of a brain. And I tell people it's a brain so that when you lose your mind, no, this I need this for the example, sorry. When you lose your mind, here's a spare, right? Which is nice and cute. The point of a stress ball, most people pick them up and say, this doesn't help, because they start squeezing. We're not trying to build muscles, trying to do stress relief. It's an isometric activity, right? So for the four of you that have them, hold your arms straight out and squeeze as hard as you can and hold it as long as you can. After about 10, 12 seconds, your arm will start shaking. It will be incredibly hard to hold this. Focus on holding it longer. When you can't hold it anymore, let it go. Your muscle will tingle. What happened is you have built up cortisol and adrenaline in that muscle. That contracted muscle. And as you release it, it's releasing the cortisol and adrenaline. It helps to decrease your stress level, your anxiety level. Again, we're not solving it. We're not eliminating it. We're just pulling it down to a level that the hamster calms down and gets off the wheel. So then we can do what? We can hear truth. So that we can remind ourselves to trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding, and all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Not easy, not simple. He will ask us to go through some stuff. Right? In this world, you will find trouble. He found it before we did. He overcame. We've got to remind ourselves of these truths. And certainly we can start our day focusing on these truths. That's a great plan to start focusing on Jesus more than the waves. The goal is the older you get, hopefully the better you get at these things. Doesn't always happen. I still got some guys over here holding it longer. Maybe let go now. I don't want you to damage yourself. The other thing, the other starting place for lots of people is breathing exercises. We had that in the Kahoot. Box breathing is a pretty good place to start, right? Box breathing, the point is it's such an abnormal way to breathe, you focus on the breathing more than your own anxiety. You inhale for a count of four. You hold for a count of four. You exhale for a count of four. and it needs to be in a rhythm beat, right? In, two, three, four, hold, two, three, four, out, two, three, four. If you do this for long enough, you'll hyperventilate, so don't pass out. The idea is maybe 2-3 minutes. Because again, we're just trying to kick that out of gear, right? So that's a good thing to try. Lots of different breathing exercises I could tell you, but that's probably the most simple one. What else can you do? Focus on what can I control? What action can I take, right? I hate traffic. That's more of an anger reaction, not an anxiety reaction, but I hate traffic. And I live quite a distance from Criswell College. So every time I'm driving here, I have to deal with traffic. I can't escape it. I can control what highway I come on. I can control whether I'm willing to pay for the toll road or not. I can control what lane I drive in. I can control what audio I have in my car to help me manage my reaction. Most of the time it's an audiobook because then I can focus on the book more than the traffic is annoying. And I don't feel like I'm wasting 2.5 hours here and back again every time I drive over. So that's some options that work for me. Won't work for everybody. When I'm really amped up, I put praise and worship on. Because I'm too amped up to even focus on the audiobook. So again, you've got to have some options. Anybody like adult coloring books? I like to color Snoopy. Or Mario. I don't necessarily want something that's so complicated that I've got to put my reading glasses on to see what I'm doing. That kind of frustrates me. But that's an option. Some people just want to draw or paint or whatever. Some people like to journal. I'm not a huge proponent of journaling because it's too much like venting. And again, if we're just venting for the sake of venting, we're focusing more on the storm than the solution. Right? We need to get to a place where we can hear our Father's voice, where we can hear truth. Activity of any kind, push-ups, pull-ups, I'm a fan of weights, go for a walk or a run, play ping pong, pickleball, I don't care what it is. One of my favorite things to do with the kids is I put dance music on in the kitchen. I don't know why the kitchen, maybe this is where we have a dance party in the kitchen. Right? All of the things. Because it's fun and it's invigorating and it releases endorphins and it loosens us up and it gets us off the anxiety, the problem. Loosens us up a bit, right? So think about, I don't know, those kinds of things. The other thing, and I don't know, I think this comes from the mental health people at my kids' colleges. I have two older kids that are both in college. But they'll come home and say, we have to go touch grass. All right. Why are we touching grass? Because mental health says it's good to be in nature. Studies, lots and lots and lots of them, particularly since COVID, has said if you put yourself in nature of any kind, all of the negative emotions decrease. Right? We lived for a while in Colorado when I was doing my doc work. I used to love to go on hikes up to the mountain and just sit there. And I would sing to God and admire what he created. It was one of my favorite things to do. It's one of the things I miss most, right, about Colorado. The problem is, how many of y'all live on campus? Y'all are locked in a sea of concrete. Here's where it gets really fun. Your brain does not know the difference between real and fictional. You can put a video of nature on your big screen TV with sounds of nature and your brain doesn't know the difference, right? So fake it into being in nature, right? It works. And if you can escape the concrete and go find some grass, yeah, go touch grass, it's better, right? Couple of more things. Do what's hard. You know, courage is not the absence of fear. It's doing what's necessary in spite of it. Most often, the thing that we are anxious about has no power when we do it. When I was you guys' age, in you guys' seats, I had severe social phobia. I was highly terrified of public speaking. I hated talking in class. I hated talking in front of a room. I've been doing it for a whole lot of years now. Why? Because I knew professionally I was going to have to figure out how to get in front of this. So at 26 years old, I volunteered to teach human growth and development at Metro State College. My very first class, I had 150 students in a stadium classroom. And sitting at eye level was a nice young lady who had spikes embedded in her cheeks. This is back in the day when facial piercings were not common, right? I mean, this is a long time ago. It rattled me. Got through it 3 times a week. I had to confront my anxiety 3 times a week. By the end of that semester, I'd figured out how to manage it. It was not easy. It was not pleasant. It would have been easier to run away from it. But when something is anxiety provoking and you run away from it, you are telling your brain that it's a valid fear. When you confront it and realize it's smoke and mirrors, you are telling your brain, this thing has no power over me. It can't solve this for me. So do the hard thing, right? Do the hard thing. So we're going to pray, and then we're going to move into a time of question and answer. And so if y'all have questions, fine. After that, there are some recommendations, book recommendations that I've asked Rob to put on the board. I want to explain what these are so that those of you that are interested can write them down.
They should also have gotten a handout, perhaps, when they came.
Okay, so you might have also gotten a handout. The first one on that list, The Anxious Generation, talks about the rising levels of anxiety and what drives it. Social media, a number one. The more time you spend on social media looking at other people's lives, the more anxious and depressed you get. Limit it, right? The middle one is basically a psychologist talking about common cognitive behavior therapy techniques. It's basically some of the things we've been talking about today to quiet the chatter in your head. It's going to fall very much in line with the things that we talked about today. This last one is actually a workbook you can get. And if you answer the questions and fill out the charts and things like that, it will step you through how to manage your anxiety. So if y'all have questions about any of that, y'all are certainly willing to ask. All right, so let's pray. Father God, thank you for this day. Thank you for wisdom and truth that you put in front of us. Thank you for guidance, and help us to trust in you and to seek you and to quiet the thoughts in our mind enough that we can be about your work instead of letting the enemy distract us with our anxiety. We ask these things in your name, amen.
Amen. Let's give it up for Dr. Burgess. And as she's making her way up here, as a public service, I'm the one who was finding the bibliographic data for the handout. I noticed that the middle book, the chatter book, is currently on sale on Amazon. The ebook is for $1.99. So if you want a relatively cheap way into that bibliography, then you could, like today, probably get the middle book for like $2 if you want it, if this is something you're interested in.
I will also tell you that you can check all of those out at your public library for free.
There you go. Even somehow cheaper than the $2. Yep. Okay. That was so great. I was wondering if we could start by talking about, oh, and I've got Discord open. So if anybody has, I know that this is a topic that affects a lot of you. So if you have a specific question, stick on the Discord, we'll get to it. But one of the things that I know I struggle with at times is like, I know what my coping mechanisms are, but I don't always know immediately once I'm starting to really like consistently feel anxious or angry or any other kind of emotion. You know, it's like, I don't know what the anxiety version of this is, but every once in a while, Danielle will be like, you're really angry about something. I'm like, I'm not angry. And I'm like, oh, wait, you know, but I've probably been there for a little while. I'm interested because you think about this very analytically. How do you even diagnose that you've gotten to the point that maybe you need to think through what next steps you need?
So one of the biggest things that we spend a lot of time talking about in the beginning stages of therapy is knowing your body. Each of us is wired a little bit different in anxiety and anger, depression. They look a little bit different. But when you are feeling a certain type of way, it lives somewhere in your body, right? For me, it's this muscle right here across, just from my left shoulder to my neck. And the more angry or anxious I get, it just twists. And when it starts spasming, I know I'm out of control, right? In terms of anger, I'm with you. My husband can see it coming and he'll look at me and he'll just say my name in that certain tone of voice. And I know I need to walk away because I'm fixing to lose it. It's about knowing yourself well enough. And really, this is where mindfulness, I think, comes into play. You quiet your body when you're feeling that way and figure out, is it living in my face? Are my hands clenched? Is my stomach roiling? Where is it in your body? And then that becomes your tell, for those of you who are poker players. When your emotions start to get lit, that part of your body is going to start to engage. And so you pay attention to that part of your body enough that that becomes your litmus test, measuring tool, whatever.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess my question is, how do we work on not being afraid of that emotion? Like not being afraid of my anger, sadness, grief, and expressing that without hurting.
Well, let's ask an easy question. It's tricky. It's tricky. I mean, I think most of us don't come to talking about things naturally easily. If we did, I wouldn't have a therapy job, like, right? I wouldn't have done that for 25 years of my career. But I think a lot of it is about recognizing when your emotions are so out of control that I may need to say something that you don't need to hear. I'm a very verbal processor. And so when my emotions are amped up, I need to verbally process it. But if I verbally process it in that moment with people I care about, I'm going to wound them. And so I will put myself in timeout in my locked room, in my bathroom, in my closet, and I will just process. And when I burn through the emotion part of it, then I can get to a place and say, what part of this do I need the other person to hear so that we can figure out a resolution, right? And so it's about knowing emotions aren't bad, right? They exist, but knowing when it's gotten to the point that I can't govern what's coming out of my mouth well enough, and I don't want to do damage as we're trying to build something.
So if you're on the other side of this, like kind of the perspective or the point of view is I'm struggling with anxiety. Here are some things I can do. What if I'm not struggling with anxiety, but one of my friends clearly is? Like you talked about how maybe you don't talk to everybody about everything. They're not. But if you're the one who somebody's coming to, what are some good ways of kind of pointing them in the right direction? Or what are some practices for like helping a friend who has anxiety?
Great question. And I think part of it is you knowing what the coping skills are. You knowing that going for a walk helps. So you say, okay, they come to you and they're really amped about it. Hey, let's go for a walk. And we can talk while we're walking. And instead of just letting them vent, you want to get to a place where you say, okay, so what can you do about it? Right? Or, you know, you can invite them to go and shoot hoops in the gym or play ping pong or whatever. Because again, quite honestly, when I worked early in my career, I worked with a lot of teenage guys, a lot of whom were gang members that didn't want to talk to a therapist. So y'all, I'm not a good basketball player. This is not my gift. But I would say let's go shoot hoops, because in the process of playing basketball, they would forget that they weren't supposed to be processing with a therapist. Right? And I could get them talking about something, and then we could move toward now what do we do? Right? So it helps for you to at least know that venting in and of itself is not helpful. How do we step through this? What you don't want to do is throw a scripture at them, right? If that makes sense. I see this happen a lot. Well, you're just not trusting Jesus enough. You're supposed to cast your cares on it. These kinds of things are not going to help. Because again, if their anxiety is lit up enough that they can't hear their father's voice, it's going to make them angry. And you're going to lose the connection, the relationship.
Yeah, for sure. What about situations where there's something else clearly going on as well? Like I was in a community group once with a former I think he was a former Marine. It was military. And he had seen active duty. And I think it was even environmental. He would start to trigger PTSD. But sometimes when it was coming, it was like there were emotions, but it was connected to this like larger thing or something like that. Is there any way that the advice would differ if you have some kind of systematic, there's like more going on in some way?
PTSD is tricky, and it certainly depends on what the relationship is there. If it's just like, this is just my buddy that lives down the street, I don't know that you're going to have a close enough relationship that the person's going to be vulnerable enough with you to talk about those things. Particularly when there's a trauma history, the relationship has to be solid enough that they are willing to be vulnerable, right? But, you know, when there are environmental stressors, a lot of times, again, assuming that you have a good enough relationship, you can ask this question. It's about saying, okay, what are your triggers? And I'm going to do my best not to trip over them. My first quarter in college, one of my cohort was Sarge. He was Vietnam era vet that was coming back to school. And the very first time I met him, he said, I'm Sarge. You won't ever know my name. Do not drop your backpack behind me. You will find yourself on the floor. Good to know. So, I mean, it really is about learning what those triggers are and trying to sidestep those things as much as possible. A lot of times vets, particularly with PTSD, they don't seek therapy because they don't trust us because we haven't served them well.
Dr. Spring and Dr. Moore, I'm curious, like, how y'all think about handling stress in your own life. Like, if did any of these practices resonate with you, or are there something different that you do, those kinds of things?
I think the acknowledging is a really important part about this, but doing it correctly. When I was struggling with the dissertation, I went to an academic counselor because I didn't know that was a thing, right? And so, and he specialized in helping do the hard things academically. And he asked how I talked about the dissertation process with my friends, like the other graduate students in the program. And he listened to me talk and he said, well, no wonder you don't want to work on this. Listen to how you talk about this. He said, your body wants to avoid this thing. And I wish that it had been more of a conversation for that group, because on graduation, they were all laughing about the medications that they had been on the whole time that got them to that point, like of graduation and the diploma. And I was like, nobody told me. I said, that was an option. Like that was something I should have considered. And because I think we're just now coming to an age where we're able to talk about it without shame or fear, especially with the Christian aspect, right? Take my vitamins, pray more, right? Drink more water, and things will be fine. So I guess my question for you though is, because we're probably going to mess this up either right as the person with anxiety or the friend. So is there a way to practice? Because right, if I jump in and try to problem solve with the person, or if I need to sit with them, but then it turns into something that's just venting. Is there a way to do that, or can you recommend something that would help discover what that balance is?
That's a great point. Thanks for bringing that up, because there is definitely a piece about you don't want to jump into problem solving mode too quickly, because like, you know, if your buddy just broke up with a relationship, okay, we're not going to deep dive into problem solving right then. There does have to be some period of time to sit with something. I also think that it begs the question of, do you want to talk about it? Asking the person who's going through the thing. I had this experience when my mom was dying, when I was here before. I would kind of put it in a box in the corner and say, you know, okay, I've made peace with it for the moment. And then somebody who was very well-meaning would come and say, how you doing with your mom? And I'm like, I would, in the process of answering their question, it would light up my anger and frustration and grief again. And so I stayed in that kind of circular place. So acknowledge the fact that they may not always want to talk about it as well.
See, but I remember being so angry with myself that I didn't ask you about that when you were here.
Totally fine.
But does that make sense? That I felt so guilty that I knew you were struggling with this, yeah. But I was like, do I talk to her? Do I not talk to her? Yeah. And it's so funny to hear you say that, because that's something that I think about with you.
Well, but I think this comes back to my Rubik's Cube example. If I need this solved, I, as the person going through this, have to be willing to ask for help. This is a really, really hard thing to do. And when I ask for help, I have to be willing to give it to the other person, right? And not say, oh, well, you're doing it wrong, but really take the feedback from them, right? And they're not going to do it, like loading the dishwasher, they're not going to do it the same way I would do it. But if it gets done and it's better, it's enough, right? So as a friend, I think, again, it's that acknowledgement. Is now a good time? Do you want to talk about this now? If the answer is no, I'm okay with that. Come find me. And if it's just a venting, I call it trauma dumping in my class. If you're just venting and venting and venting and there's no clear path forward, and we're not talking about something that has happened in the last, let's say, 4 to 6 weeks, then no, it needs to be pointed toward a, what are you going to do next?
Yeah, that's really good. In terms of time, we could sit here and talk forever. That's one of the things we were saying even in the conception of this. I know we still have a number of really good questions on Discord. What we'll try to do is get Dr. Burgess on the Discord at some point, and maybe over the next few days we'll also answer those, because I know a lot of you have really specific questions and interesting questions, that kind of thing. But for right now, we'll go ahead and close. Let's give it up again for Dr. Burgess. Yeah, that was so good. Well, guys, it'll be 6 days and 23 hours till the next Wednesday, and we'll see you then.